This podcast contains material that some listeners may find distressing. Content includes explicit language and themes related to workplace bullying, harassment, sexual harassment, intimidation, stalking, physical and sexual violence, discussions relating to self-harm and suicidality, disordered eating, other mental health issues, sexism, racism, and homophobia. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Behind Blue Doors podcast, where the women of law enforcement waive their right to remain silent and speak their truth.
Welcome to Behind Blue Doors. So today we have a female who is going to speak, who chooses to remain anonymous. So we will refer to her as Nicole. Nicole, welcome to the show and thank you for sharing your story. And I will hand it over to you.
Thank you for having me on. I'm really glad that I found this podcast and my friend recommended it. Yeah, so I'm still a police officer, so I do want to remain anonymous, obviously, because there's retribution, people, and you'll kind of hear about it in my story as well a little bit. We can start when I started policing. So I started 6 years ago. I'm a small female. I think I had perceptions of policing and I feel like I felt like I didn't really fit in. So when I went to the provincial college, which is actually, so I was hired by a municipal police service, but every service in Ontario has to go to Ontario Police College for 3 months before you go to your respective municipal police services, I guess, or provincial, because we do have OPP that comes with us too. I will say that that experience was good. There wasn't anything there. I think I kind of, because of my own perceptions of policing and like, oh, you got to be tough and I'm tiny, I tried to act more macho in that, and maybe that was a bit different. But I really can't say I dealt with any, even though I didn't necessarily experience sexual harassment or bullying when I was at the provincial police college, I definitely felt there was this military style training. And they definitely, although I will say I don't feel I was as picked on as when I went back to my municipal police service, I definitely feel that they still valued, you know, the big, tough, tactical. So I just think that really reinforced my idea of, okay, I have to be big, I have to be strong, and I can't change my size, obviously. So, and then I think people too, like when I told people I'm going to try to become a police officer, everybody, you're so tiny. So I think, and that frustrates me too, because I find sometimes people are hard on police, like, oh, you use too much force, excessive force. But then it's, if I'm too small, you're going to say I'm not big enough to be a police officer. So like, which one is it? Pick one. When I say my experience at the provincial training wasn't bad, what I mean is I didn't feel targeted. I didn't have sexual harassment. So I did that training, went back to my municipal police service, and then I definitely felt picked on for my size. They would single me out because I jump, I get startled really easily. So when the gun went off, I would jump, but I would only do it the first time that the shot went off. And like, I still do that, okay? So it'll never go away. I'm just startled easy. So they put me in the middle of all the police, all the like the line of people, so that they would stop me from jumping. And basically anything I did, and it was actually a woman who was really harsh on me. And she was just like, you're not hitting enough. You're not strong enough. You're not tough enough. Like, she would just pick on me for anything and say it in front of the whole class.
So when you went to your municipality, were you there with other, were you in another training cohort?
Yeah. So we were hired together, a big group of us. And then we all went to the provincial training to get trained together. And then we all came back to our, and then so when you come back to your municipal police service, you're back with the people you were hired with in that municipality. So and then you do extra training at the municipality. It's not as long as the provincial one. It's quite short. I just remember thinking when I was in training, someone actually pulled me aside. And I actually think she's a really nice person. I just think she felt pressure from the other trainers that this role needs to be tough enough. She just said like, why are you like that? Why are you so nice? And so it just reinforced that, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I don't belong here. And I had just started. You know, and then when I got with my team, I was accepted and everything was fine. So I felt better because I felt, okay, there's my confidence but it really pissed me off that they were really trying to change me. They were really trying to make me a mean person to fit their idea of a police officer. And fortunately, my team members were super accepting of me. They really gave me confidence so I really can't say enough about the team that I landed on. Not all the members, as you will hear. So then when I landed on my team, of course you are paired with a coach officer. So they pair you with someone who trains you. So you ride in the cruiser with them, you shadow them. So it can last. Mine was 3 months, I think. There's so many hours you have to do before you can be released. And ultimately, your coach has the final say.
Is it just one coach or do you have numerous coaches during that time?
I did have two. My first coach officer was great. Like, I loved it. I was like, well, I love this job. This is going great. And then I got to my second coach officer. So before I got with my second coach officer, I had multiple people come up to me and say, I just want to warn you, he has a really bad reputation with women. I can't even believe they're letting him be a coach officer, especially to women. So of course I thought, oh my gosh.
Who warned you?
What were they saying?
Other team members. He was actually in a relationship with another police officer. So they were saying...
What did you make of that?
Watch out. They didn't say much. Basically just that, you know, watch out. He has a reputation. I can't believe they'd even let him be a coach, especially to a woman. Honestly, I guess because... I just thought I hadn't experienced it, so I didn't really think anything of it. I thought, okay, he might hit on me, but I'll tell him I'm not interested, and that'll be that. It didn't really concern me, and I was with somebody at the time, so I just thought, okay, he might ask, and then I'll say, like, I'm seeing somebody, and he'll leave me alone. Basically, he started being my coach. You know, things were okay for probably first quarter of it. And then he started saying things to me. So obviously we work late nights when you're a police officer, you work shift work. So sometimes I get off at 7 in the morning if I'm working night. Sometimes I would get off at, you know, in the middle of the night if I'm working. You just don't know when a police officer is going to get off. So he would just say things to me like, let's debrief. So let's talk about our calls. So you come over to my hot tub, we'll have some wine, we'll sit in the hot tub and we'll debrief. And I'm just like, no, we're going to debrief here after the call. So that would be his huge line. So of course I kept saying, no, I'm not doing it. And then I'd ask, well, who else is going to be there? Like, is this like for team members? Like, are all the team members going? And he'd say, well, yeah, I guess you can ask people. But of course, no one else was ever going. So I'm like, no, I'm not going. Of course, I was trying to be nice about it because like at the end of the day, I knew this guy had control over my career and a control over whether I was going to be released.
Can you share how old you were at this time?
I was 27, and I won't say his age, but he was in his 40s, I believe. So, and he was seeing somebody.
Another police officer, you said.
Another police officer. Yeah. And of course I told now my ex-boyfriend, I told him everything, you know, like this is going on. Then he started saying, why don't you break up with your boyfriend? Stuff like that. You know, you seem miserable. You should break up with your boyfriend. I can make you happy. We should be together.
I mean, how would this come up in the car? Or where were you when he would say those things?
We were in the car. We were on calls. One time we actually had apprehended a person who was suicidal. We were in the hospital and she had made some comment. Okay. But I mean, she was a child, first of all. And, you know, oh, you guys are good looking or something like that. So then he said, yeah, I know, aren't we? Like, we should be a couple. And then he just looked at me and said, we should really be a couple. I know I can make you happy. Like, you need to break up with your boyfriend. In front of, the child that we're taking to the hospital, I just thought, this is so inappropriate. He would send me, like, shirtless pictures. Oddly enough, he would send me... Now, I don't know if I was the only one who would receive these, but he would send me pictures of like random penises that he found on the internet, I'm assuming.
How would you respond to that?
Honestly, I hate to admit it, but I would just laugh it off because, and this is what I was just getting into, and I know that it's wrong, but I was afraid of what he would do to my career.
How did it make you feel?
Oh, I was so upset. I would come home crying. Yeah, it was really tough because I just thought I'm going to have to work with this person for the rest of my career. He ended up getting suspended years later.
So he was suspended. Can you say if it was for similar behavior or why was he suspended?
He was not. He was suspended for something he did outside of work.
Did you tell any other colleagues, anybody else about the harassment, what you were dealing with?
They suspected, they knew, because after they, and I will get into that part a little bit later into the story, but yeah, they suspected and they knew. So eventually, exactly what I thought started happening, where I thought this is going to affect my career, he's going to hold me back, you know, just not, he was so hard on me. Everything I did was wrong. He was always, you know, you're doing it wrong. He didn't show me anything. He left me alone all the time. If I wasn't going to debrief in the hot tub with him, then we weren't going to debrief at all. So he really didn't tell me what I was doing well, what I was, where I could improve. He was just very angry all the time. And he was, sometimes he would even get aggressive. One time I remember, I don't remember what we were talking about, but he jumped into the cruiser. We were both getting to the cruiser and he came in and we have computer screens there. They're attached, but they're there and you can kind of like swivel them around. And so he jumped in, he was just in a bad mood and he pushing everything away from him, but towards me, and was just saying, get this out of my face, like, just get this away, and aggressively pushing it. And I think the computer screen had hit my leg, but I mean, I don't even think he noticed because he was just in such a fit of rage over nothing. And he would leave me alone on calls all the time. And I was a recruit, I was learning. I remember there was at least two instances that we were in the hospital and for whatever reason, maybe we had a section, I don't know, maybe we apprehended somebody. He would just be gone for hours and then he would come back and get annoyed or get pissed off if I maybe didn't do something right because he wasn't there to ask. So it was just constant shit like that. And I was a recruit. I was not supposed to be left alone. He constantly just berated me, just made me feel like everything I did was wrong. So, you know, it was just a really, really tough situation because I'm like, I feel like I have to sleep with this guy to be released, or I feel like I have to sleep with this guy for him to get off my back. Then he got us into a car accident. So we were in the cruiser. So he would not let me drive. Because he said he had ADD and he had to drive a cruiser in my second part of training, which is, and I can see Susan's reaction, you are supposed to drive, especially if you are a recruit in your second part of training. So he would not let me drive. So he got us into a car accident. And then somehow, I don't even know how this happened, I went to driving school. I had to go back for two extra days of driving school. And my then, even though I was not driving for the second half, I was not driving with him. He told this I had to stay in his cruiser. He would not release me because I was not ready to drive on my own. I didn't even have the chance to get those skills. So that basically, and all the while he's still, you know, come to my hot tub. Let's have wine. Let's debrief. You should break up with your boyfriend. I can make you happy. You know, just all that shit. Constantly, you know, sending me pictures, like not of himself, but of like random pictures of penises on the internet or people having sex or just weird shit.
Did he ever say to you, you know, like when he's being hard on you or braiding you, you know, you can make this all stop? Did he ever utter those kinds of words, like to imply that if you did just sleep with him, it would all go away?
No, he didn't. Or sorry, he didn't say that. But I did feel that if I were to sleep with this guy, then this would all stop. So I don't want to out anybody, but I know that he has slept with other people that he's trained. And I know that he's been a coach officer for, and I know that he's taken out recruits, or not recruits, sorry, ride-alongs, and he slept with them. So I think the fact that I said no, he couldn't, like he couldn't handle it, or I don't know.
How do you know that?
Because I know them. And it was just known. People would tell me, oh yeah, he slept with her. Like he must have been telling this the team, because people knew. So basically, yeah. So I had went to driving school. He got nothing for getting us into a car accident and blaming another officer. It was totally his fault because I was in the car. So he basically did an illegal turn and got us stuck in the snow, and another car hit us.
How did you get blamed, though? What reason did they give you?
I don't know what was said. I don't know if I was necessarily blamed. I don't even understand. Or all I guess that happened was that was like, you know, I think you need extra driving training. And I'm thinking, okay, well, what about you? But I didn't say anything because I was still a recruit. So like I said before, I'm ashamed to admit it, but I just didn't challenge him because I'm like, okay, well, what you say goes. So if you say I have to go to training school, then I'm going to go. But everybody knew I wasn't driving. So I don't know how my didn't know that I wasn't driving that night. Anyways, I got approved. I went to driving school. So what's super ironic about that as well is that my first coach said, your driving skills, when I was with him, he said, your driving skills are above average. You're actually a really good driver. And the person who did my background investigation, I ended up having coffee with him later, when I just started the profession, and he was just helping me out because he knew that, you know, I was like a mentor. It was out of my realm. And he said, oh, I heard that you had done really good in the driving in the provincial college. But for some reason, my second coach officer thinks that I needed all this training in driving. And the fact that my driving was such an issue, that went on my professional record, that went on my tracking log, that went on my review as an officer. Right away, early on in my career, I wasn't even released. I was a recruit. So right away, I had a negative report. And for the record, I've never caused an accident personally, even as an officer.
Yeah, and that's interesting that you say that, because I know for myself, when I was hired, I remember other officers coming up to me and saying, you will be in an accident. It's very common. It's not a big deal. So just accept it, which was, you know, surprising to me. I didn't realize how common they were. So, I mean, I think that is important that you bring that up.
So once he ended up getting criminally charged, and it was outside of policing. It didn't have anything to do with on the job. So he got suspended, and I'm not going to go into that because it's going to identifiable information. So he ends up getting suspended for it. And then the service decides they're going to start looking at his behaviors as a coach officer and just in general, because this person already had a reputation with the service. So because it's public knowledge, he's been criminally charged, he's suspended. Now the service, you know, I'm assuming they think we need to get on this and start investigating his behaviors as a police officer, because there were complaints already for this person. So anyway, so the internal investigative unit for the service, I'm not going to say names or acronyms or anything, but they start interviewing a bunch of people. So they interviewed me and they said, people have come forward. We know that he was inappropriate with you. We know that he was sexually harassing you. So we need you to tell us everything that went on. And if you don't tell us the truth, you will be charged under the Police Services Act for deceit. I told them everything. And I said I didn't want any charges under the PSA or charge him internally for this stuff. I knew he was already getting criminally charged, and I didn't want to get involved because I knew it was an old boys club and they would protect him and it would come back on me. So I just thought, I'm just going to shut my mouth and I don't want to deal with it. At this point, honestly, it had been at least a year since he was my coach officer. So, you know, it was done. Anyway, so I mean, I'm not going into the details of the criminal charge and what happened there, but he was convicted. And
so you didn't even have a chance to tell your story. It was told for you.
Even though, and they allowed him to do all this, they allowed him to be my coach officer, knowing him, they, you know, they let it go on. And then finally, when they had a chance, I don't know what they were thinking, but obviously it's like, okay, he's suspended. We have a chance now. Let's, you know. Then everybody starts, then all the, you know, the people who were protecting him, now they're all out there telling the story, telling my story. Oh, well, they were doing this. He was doing this to her. He was doing this. Well, thanks, guys. But you didn't have my back when it was going on. And this was ongoing, because that whole case, everyone knows it's in the paper, but when an officer gets suspended, that takes forever to go to court. Okay, so this was basically my whole entire career. And I didn't want to say anything, not because I am for women's rights, but because I didn't want to be targeted. I didn't want to be known as a troublemaker, because that's what's going to happen. And I didn't want to feel like I didn't fit in or that people were talking to my back. So I just wanted it to all go away. So that was him. So then we go on to the next person. So this person, as I said, mid-management. So like sergeant, staff sergeant level. I won't specify which one. Basically, and as I said, I hope this isn't offensive, but I think he had little man syndrome. He was a small man and I'm a small woman and I made him feel big. I don't even really know when it started happening, but basically, I noticed that he would pull me aside a lot. He would pull me aside from the rest of my team and say like, oh, Nicole, I need to talk to you. And so I'd with him for hours. And while my team members were on the road responding to calls, and he'd start telling me shit that I'm like, why are you telling me this? I give my wife a really good life so like she doesn't have to worry. You know, I work hard so that she can have everything she wants. You know that I dressed her? You should have seen her when I first saw her. I taught that girl how to dress. I dress her really nice. Just stuff.
What was the context or how did these conversations come up?
Oh, he would just tell me. You didn't even have to say anything to this man. He would just go into it. He would just start. I don't know why. I would even get annoyed when he'd pull me aside. What do you want to talk about now? Because at first I didn't even put the connection. I just thought, this guy's a total idiot. Yeah. And then, so I am an educated woman. So he would start talking to me about education. He started telling me, yeah, I got into law school, but I declined it. I got into med school, but I declined it. Well, I'm like so smart, and just kept going on about all this stuff that he had gotten into and he declined. So I started talking to my team members and I'm saying, he's saying this stuff to me. Like, isn't this weird? And my team member says, well, yeah, he's always pulling you in to talk to you for hours. What's that about? And he said, he's grooming you. Why is he telling you all this stuff about his wife? Why is he, you know, pulling you aside all the time? We need people on the road and you're in there for 2 hours talking to him. I think my team members thought that I was encouraging it. Little did they know, I was so pissed off. So he would just comment on everything. If I did anything different to my hair in front of the whole entire team, like we would be sitting there. So every morning we'd go in for parade. They tell you what's going on in the city. So he would say, oh, did you do something? Oh, Nicole, did you do something different with your hair today? Or then he'd say, oh, Nicole, I love your eyelashes today. Did you do something different with your eyelashes? And one time my friend was beside me and she just says, I'm really uncomfortable with this conversation. And I said, you're uncomfortable. So he would just do that shit all the time. Pretty much every shift I had, he pulled me either off the road or he pulled me out of right after parade and said, I need to talk to you. He talked about shit I can't even remember. Then he started saying, oh, like you should stop by my house for a drink when you go home, like just stop for a drink. And no,
I'm not. Is it common for people on your team to ask you to go out with them for drinks or come home to have a drink?
So the only time I've ever been asked to go for a drink is by my and my other than that, I have not been asked to go for a drink unless it's obvious that they're trying to date me. So I have been asked to go for a drink, but they were trying to date me. But no, it's not common. The other married men on my team would never ask me for a drink. They would never ask me. They would never tell me about their wife. They would never pull me aside and talk to me for hours about nothing. It was just him.
I think that's a really actually important distinction that you make, is that those men who are respectful and doing their job and they're, you know, like they're not going to be asking you personal questions like that. Like there's a very distinct way that difference in the treatment.
So I'll speak for my team. I would say 80% of the men were super respectful, would never, ever, ever ask me something like that. Would never ask me for a drink, would never cross the line. It's a very few amount, but they seem to climb the ranks.
Just to say, did anybody, when he's saying these things to you, does anybody stand up or comment or say, you know, knock it off or...
Nope. They said to me, oh, you should put in a complaint. This is ridiculous. He's always pulling you off the road. He's obsessed with you. He's in there talking to you for hours. Like, you need to go put in a complaint. And I said, well, if I put in a complaint, are you going to have my back? Are you going to tell him what he's been doing? Because I've seen other officers put in complaints and they don't do that. They just let her, you know, suffer on her own. So unfortunately, no, I never did put in a complaint.
Your team members can see this, but everything is happening one-on-one.
I mean, it was infuriating because even though like I said, I've said before, most of the men in the service are amazing. But when you don't stick up for what you see, and when you can see it and you even bring it up to the victim, but you yourself won't say anything to the predator, it just...
You're just complicit in it.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. That's exactly it. You were just complicit in it. And I felt like, first of all, I felt it was all on my shoulders. I have to go in and put in this complaint, even though they saw it too. And are they going to have my back? Because I was already warned, if you put in a complaint, just know you are by yourself. They are not going to admit to seeing anything. So, and I had already seen it. You know, there was so many incidents of other officers saying inappropriate things to me throughout my policing career. So one time I was doing my notes, I had just went on a call, I was sitting in my cruiser, and a male coworker pulled up beside me in his cruiser and says, "I'm just wondering if you want to have discreet sex. You know, I can make it really discreet. I'll make sure no one finds out." And as awful as it is to say, you kind of brush it off because...
Well, you got to make a joke about it, right? Because no matter what, you're going to get some sort of a reputation. And exactly. So, I mean,
yeah,
are you going to be the sensitive one who can't take a joke when they turn around and say, "Oh, I was just kidding anyway"? You know what I mean? Like, it's like walking a tightrope.
Exactly. Because these are the men who would say, "Oh, he's, you know, look at how he talks to women, look at that." But then they were buddy-buddy with him 5 minutes later, out when we're all, you know, waiting, either out when we're after, you know, we're after parade, when we're about to go to our cruisers, they're all buddy-buddy, they all have their jokes. So it's just, how do I approach this? How do I approach this and not have my career affected, not have my mental health affected, not feel like I'm alone? Because even there are parts of my career where I felt I wasn't backed on a call. I felt they took their time. This particular guy, after he had asked me the one time, "Do you want to have discreet sex?" And I said, "No, thank you." We went to a work function another time, and he came up to me. I was standing because I was waiting for my friend who was in the bathroom. He came up to me, was towering over me, looking down and saying, and he had this smirk on his face, and he said, "I think I want to have sex with you so bad because I can just throw you around in bed." And I was just looking up at him and I'm like, what are you talking about? We're at a work function. And it was almost like he was trying to intimidate me because he was as close as he could get to me, staring down at me. And so, and of course I, you know, kind of laughed it off and just left. And after that, he barely would talk to me. He would make like snide comments about how I am as a police officer because I didn't have his macho style. Yeah. So I felt he was making fun of me. I just felt they were like, he was talking about my back, and which is uncomfortable.
Wow.
So anyway, I will get back to my story about my middle management supervisor. So again, staff sergeant or sergeant. So there was actually one instance. No, we'll talk about the two instances. So one time, so for a Canada Day, every police officer is on duty because it's a crazy day. I think every service, every police officer is on duty. The whole entire service, okay? So I find out that he, out of all the officers in the service, he handpicked me to be with him for the night. So he paired me with him for the entire Canada Day. I was with him for 12 hours, I think, walking while working. And he is telling me that my boyfriend's too young for me and that I need to break up with him, that that's going to cause issues. Yeah, he started telling me, you know, who you dating, and, oh, he's too young for you, that's going to cause issues, you should leave him now. Another time we were at another place, I won't say where, and he made another comment about my boyfriend about, oh, you shouldn't move for him because he lives somewhere else. And my friend actually spoke up. She's a female, of course. And so she said, "How is this your business?" And then kind of like, "Yeah, Nicole, just break up with him. Just break up with him so you can be single, so you can stay here." Like, she was just kind of making fun of him. And then another time I was sitting doing with another mid-level person, a superior to me. Yeah. So I was doing what we call, so every year you have, well, I'm pretty sure most services do this. Every year you have to get like a, you do a...
Oh, like an assessment.
an assessment. Thank you. Sorry. So we're doing the assessment and we're doing the assessment. So at this point, my became even higher in the service. So, and he already had a reputation. Like I shouldn't say a reputation. He already had an issue with the motor. So it was another female. It was about, so I'm actually going to get into this with my story as well, but he basically blocked her career. And he did the same. He did the same for me. And I was doing my assessment with another mid-level person. And he wasn't even supposed to be at the station because he was promoted. So he was not even there. So all of a sudden he walks in, just my luck. So I'm sitting there with this other person doing this assessment. And I was wearing my glasses. And he comes in around the corner and he just gives me this look. And he says, "Oh, meow, you look really good in those glasses. You look like a sexy librarian." And I looked at the superior person I was talking to, and I just said, "I don't know what to say." And then he says, in a joking manner, and I get it because it's tough, but this is where, you know, men need to speak up, because imagine how difficult it is being a female and having to speak up for yourself. So he basically says, "Is this sexual harassment?" and starts laughing. And then basically just stands there smug, just, you know, I turned to him and I said, "Oh, if you like him so much, you should get a pair for your wife." So by the time that he ended up getting promoted, he really wasn't in my hair unless I ran into him, which sometimes would happen. That kind of put an end to it because like he didn't have control over me anymore. He wasn't on my team.
So your harassment ended because of his promotion.
Yep. So I'll go back to the part of him. He did block my career. I wanted to get all these courses when I had started. I had seen all my other team members get courses. I had been stopped because I look young. And I had been stopped by other people, like sergeants, staff sergeants, people. I would just be walking and they would stop me and they would be like, "What's your name? I'm putting you forward for undercover work because you look so young." And so then my basically said, "Nope. You haven't been on long enough. It's not happening." So then I found out that one of my really good friends got an undercover position within a year and a half of her being on. And I was on for longer than that when I had been asked to do undercover work. He denied every course that I asked for. And I was the most educated person on my team by far. I only got approved 4 courses when he was off of our team and someone else was in. That's the only time I got courses.
You know, that's a lot to go through at the beginning of your career. How do you plan to navigate it from here? Like, where do you go? How do you plan to deal with this moving forward in your career?
And it's sad to say, but I feel like even when I tell my story, I'm kind of like, oh, it's not even that bad because I know worse, which is horrible because it's just like, you shouldn't have to even deal with that. I've worked in many other professions. And let me tell you, I have never worked in something quite like policing. I think for me, it's a matter of, I'm hoping to change it. It's definitely hard when you're in it, but I'm hoping that, you know, staying in it will help change the culture and, you know, not putting up with this stuff. I feel like this podcast is a great platform to get it out there, to let people know what we're dealing with and that we need your support. We need to support each other as women, and not only women, there's lots of allies. There's lots of, like I said, 80% are fantastic.
Can you tell us, so when you're going through all this, what did your mental health look like? Just to give people a sense of like what?
It affected my sleep. I never really had panic attacks per se, but just very anxious. My mind was constantly racing. I just fear of something going wrong when there was nothing, like, not to say that there was nothing, but it was just, there was nothing to pinpoint it. It's not like I was, you know, a disease or something where it was just like, okay, that makes sense. Like I couldn't necessarily pinpoint what was going on, but I just felt like they're doomed.
You started experiencing the anxiety, that it was anxiety.
Yeah, definitely not.
Because it's not talked about in your service. It's not like you're not given a heads up as to what to expect.
No, not at all. And I definitely think that if you're a man, it's okay for you to have mental health problems. If you're a female, and I've seen it, so they can say whatever they want, but I've heard men talk about, oh, you know, she's been off, or like, she's been off the road for this and this. And it's like, well, so what? That man's been off the road for just as long. Are you going to comment about that?
The other thing I was going to say that I think is really important when you talked about, you know, my story's not even that bad. And I think it's a lot of women have really similar stories where they feel like, oh, well, I wasn't raped, or I wasn't sexually assaulted, or I wasn't whatever. So what do I have to complain about? But I think it really helps to highlight the nuanced way in which those systems are maintained. You know, those systems of misogyny, sexism, discrimination. It can happen in a very overt way, but it can also happen in a very covert way that we're not even aware is happening.
And it really affects, you know, what scares me is how do we change it? Because policing has so much nepotism in it. So police promotions are not based on merit. They are based on who you know. So if you are friends with the staff sergeant, if you're friends with the inspector, you're going to get into a unit. It doesn't matter if you have education in X, Y, and Z. Let's say that like some genius in technology, like some expert software engineer, whatever, came into policing. That doesn't mean he's going to go into the tech crimes at all. No, no. Especially if they're female, you better be friends with the surgeon and the staff surgeon. I mean, and like I said before, it's like the people who maintain the status quo just keep getting promoted. And so then they promote their friends who maintain the status quo. And then they promote their friends who maintain the status quo. So I don't know, like you need to have, this needs to be shut down. But these discussions need to happen so people know where the issues are. Along with the sexual harassment, I definitely faced, I saw nepotism, let's say. This was more recent. I had an interest in a particular topic. And so I had done research on it. And my research basically had been used within the service without my permission. And it was basically lip service to the public to say, you know, this is how we're addressing the issue. This is how we're dealing with it, without actually using me or without listening to what I had to say or including me in these meetings. They just took my research, deciphered it on their own. And, you know, it's interesting because I actually had the superior officer. So he was the head of a unit. He emailed me, he called me when he got a hold of my research to basically look at a draft he was proposing to the chief for his next promotion. So he wanted me to look at it to make sure that it was accurate, that what he was saying was accurate for me to basically edit it for him. And he called me and he had said, you know, this is great that I have your research because I really didn't know anything about this. And now I feel like I do. And he was asking me, you know, certain parts he didn't understand, if I could explain it to him. In the report, he asked me, and I have this email, he asked me, how do I cite this particular point? And I said, well, that's my point. So you can't cite it because that research is not published. So it just goes to show, you know, there are people in positions who have really they have no right to be in those positions. And how can a service function optimally? And how can it succeed if we are not using our best officers? How can it succeed when there is no accountability and when there isn't a fair process within policing, you know, even with promotions? I mean, it's no wonder there's all this political climate around policing now.
If you could say anything right now to leaders out there, what would you want to say to them?
I would say, you know that it's wrong, you know what's going on, and you are doing nothing about it. Nothing about it. They know about it. Yeah. Stop climbing the ladder and deal with it. You will have a healthier workforce. There will be less people who are off on PTSD or stress leave or whatever they're going on. There's going to be less suspensions. And it's going to save. And this is where citizens need to get involved too. Like, do you realize you pay for police's salary when they're off and they're suspended? You pay for it?
Well, interestingly enough, the research shows us that officers who have depression and burnout, anger, that has a higher chance of manifesting in use of force or abuse of force complaints. So part of what I don't understand is why aren't there mandatory psychological assessments every year? Like, I know it's expensive, but you do mandatory, you know, subject control, you do mandatory firearms, there's fitness every year, there's certain things that you have to check off. So to me, being of sound mind is very important. So one other question that I have is, what would you want to say to other women listening right now, whether they're officers or in the public?
I would say that you're not alone. I think it's therapeutic to share your story and not bottle it up. and to know that people are hearing your story. And not only police officers, I'm hoping, you know, citizens, you know, civilians, as we say, hear it too, you know, to reach out.
Lisa, do you have any other questions for Nicole?
No, I don't have any more questions. I just want to thank you truly for coming on here and telling your story. I know it's difficult, and Susan and I are blessed to have heard it and for you to feel comfortable to share it with us. And we are just so grateful.
And I am so pleased and fortunate to have met you and to be allowed to listen to your story.
Thanks for joining us today. Be sure to subscribe to the Behind Blue Doors podcast to catch the latest episodes. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And check out our website at www.behindbluedoors.org. Take care, and until next time.